tweet at Today SOR.
An attack on one of the world's largest oil processing facilities in Saudi Arabia has sharply impacted global oil supplies and prices. Indeed, it is the second recent strike against the Saudi Aramco oil company and comes just days before the United Nations General Assembly opens. The US President Donald Trump yesterday warned that the US was locked and loaded, as he put it, to respond to the attack, but he stopped short of suggesting that Iran was responsible for that attack, though I think his Secretary of State Mike Pompeo did lay the blame at the door of Iran. With me now in studio to discuss this event and its implications is David Horgan of Petrol Resources. David, thank you indeed for coming in. First of all, what's been happening? What's the impact on the price of oil this morning as a result of this?
Well, the oil market opened late last night, our time in Asia, and it spiked 20%. But what was happening there was hedge funds had been shorting last week for various reasons, including on Friday the 13th, a bit brave, and they had to cover their positions at any price. Then the price moderated back down to about $67, which is 10% higher than it was before the weekend. But the psychological impact of these attacks will be quite significant. The material impact is relatively limited in that the facility is about 7% of world capacity, but only processing of oil and gas. The equipment is relatively easy to repair or replace, but the action has focus people's attention on the fact that there's a lot of risk in the market, and the risk is not in the oil price.
Yes, and for instance, just looking at the Financial Times this morning, they're saying, they're quoting an expert as saying, it will take weeks to ramp up and bring the complex back to maximum capacity.
Yeah, well, the facilities, they're of limited sophistication in the sense that when you take oil out of the ground, you have to separate the oil from the gas and then some poison gas, hydrogen sulfate, and bits of sand, and take out the condensate. So it's a relatively straightforward plant. It's big, but it's relatively straightforward. Now, when you have an accident like this, you shut down everything, and they weren't using all of it anyway. Mm-hmm. But they've said that by close of business today, half of the existing use will be restored. And within weeks, probably, the balance will be restored. Now, if the damage is more extensive, it could be many weeks or months, but it's not going to be years.
Yes, but I suppose the other thing is, and this is maybe of wider concern, it shows that there is a capacity there to attack the most important supplier of oil on the world market. Now, whether it's Iran or whether it is the Houthi rebels from Yemen, maybe it doesn't make too much difference, or does it?
Well, I think I said this when we were here the last time. For the last 2 years, the world has been living on borrowed time. Something like this was always going to happen because we've effectively lost Venezuelan exports. We've lost about half of Iranian oil exports. Russia's under sanctions. Meanwhile, demand growth is surging around the world. It was 2.3% last year. It's about 1.5% this year. Inventories are falling, and there's an accident waiting to happen. And an event like this really focuses you on the dangers.
And is there a capacity elsewhere that can be ramped up then as a response or in response to this?
Well, if the sanctions were lifted on Russia, you could add, in the absence of a change to the OPEC deal, you could add about 500,000 barrels a day from Russia. Iran could add about 2 million barrels within 6 months if the sanctions are lifted. But to do that, you need to resolve the geopolitical disputes. And effectively what you need to do is you need to stop this crazy war in Yemen, which is the sore that's causing this problem. You have a low-level civil war between the Sunnis and Shias running since 2003, the Iraq invasion. That's manifested in Syria, which has now been finally won by the Syrian government, backed by Russia, but also in Yemen. These wars serve no purpose. There isn't going to be a clean-cut outcome. And the new crown prince in Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, has been pushing this aggressive foreign policy as a way of establishing his power in his country and in the Arab world. But it's been massively counterproductive. And what appears to be happening is that Trump realizes this, and Trump wants to resolve these disputes. Like in recent weeks, there was a downing of an American drone over international waters, the Americans say. Trump launched an attack and the planes were in the air, and then he pulled them back. And of course, the liberal media were all hypercritical of Trump, saying he was indecisive, he was crazy, he was a coward. But knowing the Iranians as we do, I think that was whether by luck or policy, that was a deliberate way to play them, because by launching the attack, the meaning would have been highly significant to the Iranians.
But this attack on Saturday morning on this Saudi oil facility, I mean, do you think the Houthi rebels would have had the capacity to do that, or do you think Iran was responsible and effectively is denying it?
If you look at the map, both the Quraysh oil field and the processing plant are a lot closer to Iran than they are to Yemen. And the Houthis, while brave fighters with low-level weapons, they're not sophisticated enough to launch a combination of missile and drone attacks that hits the target so accurately. So you can be sure there's some Iranian involvement, although it may not necessarily have the fingerprints of the Iranian leadership, because Iran is quite a fragmented decision-making process, and the Revolutionary Guards in particular have a long history of intervening in southern Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and elsewhere, and this has their fingerprints all over it.
Yes, and I suppose another point that's been made by some of the observers analysing this today is what it does is it shows the vulnerability of Saudi Arabia.
Well, this is the great irony, that Saudi Arabia is an intrinsically unstable situation. Now, it's been unstable for 50 years with a large Shia population in the oil producing areas run by a Wahhabi regime that is oppressing the Shia community. So why provoke people whose natural allies are Iran? And then, of course, the great irony of the whole situation is that at the same time that they're fighting proxy wars in Yemen and Syria, they're getting on very well within OPEC. So what the Americans and the international institutions should be doing is incentivizing the two sides to stop these low-level wars and to restore stability to the Middle East and the oil markets.
Yeah, and I suppose, again, one of the many imponderables in all of this, David, is that Or maybe people like you, experts in the field, can be more precise about it. How is it going to impact at the pumps?
Well, about 42% of what you pay at the pump is actually being paid to the oil industry. The balance is excise, carbon duties and VAT. So effectively, if the oil price goes up like 10% today, that will, in about 5-6 weeks, feed through at about 7.5 cents a litre to your petrol, slightly less on your diesel. If it goes up 20%, it'll be about a 15-cent increase in what you pay at the pumps.
Okay, so, and that's something that obviously Pascal Donoghue will have to take into consideration as he contemplates what he's going to do in the budget. And with all of this pressure for a carbon tax increase, we could be facing quite the belt.
Well, the green industrial complex is pushing for big increases in carbon taxes. To really impact behaviour, you probably need to quadruple or more the carbon tax. That will lead to a backlash. So it's likely that he will ease in carbon taxes, maybe go from the current €20 per tonne to €40 per tonne over a couple of years.
OK, we'll leave it there. My thanks to you for coming in. That's David Horgan of Petro Resources.